I'm thinking another fun fact about pineapple. It's what a lot of the ocean-going yacht racers eat on the trip because it's one of the few foods that tastes the same going in as it does coming back out.
This is Super Fast Business with James Schranko. James Schranko. Helping you build your business super fast.
James Schranko here. Welcome back to superfastbusiness.com. Today, we're delving into the topic of sleep. How to improve your sleep with Danny Flood from openworldmag.com. Welcome, Danny.
Hey, James. Thanks so much for having me here. It's always a pleasure to speak with you.
Well, it's nice to pin you down. I know you're on travel at the moment and you're somewhere in the outposts of Thailand. So I'm also glad that you could join us and share some of your insights into how to improve your sleep. You've actually got a product on this on Amazon called Hack Sleep. So I know you've done some research around this. You've got a body of work that sort of presents your findings, and I know that most of my audience sleep. So it's something that we should learn about. Why did you even go down this route of sleep as something you were interested in?
Yeah, sure. So I'm calling today from Thailand. I've been traveling. You might hear roosters behind me in the background and from this hotel room. And I really was interested in sleep because this was something that I struggled with for so long. I've been a personal improvement junkie for more than a decade, you know, reading a lot of self-improvement books. Like I could sit in the bookstore for 5 hours and would just pass by like 5 minutes. I'm really big on performance, especially mental performance. But one thing that I never really figured out was sleep. It was something that I struggled with. I was always an insomniac. Sleep deprivation tormented me. And I had so many wasted days because I didn't sleep well at night. And it would snowball because it would be like a psychological effect where I'd get really upset that I wasn't asleep. I'd get depressed. I had a lack of motivation, you know, where I had goals, but you know, like it was subverting my goals. So I wasn't giving my best effort to them. And so finally I just decided that I published my first book last year. It was called Buy Your Own Island. And I wrote 4 books after that. And the last one I wrote was Hack Sleep. And the reason why I wrote that book, because I interviewed an author and I asked him, you know, what kind of books do you write? And he just says, I write books that I really am interested in and I enjoy. And this was the topic that I was really keen to figure out. So I spent about 9 months learning up and trying everything that I could. You know, sleep is such a complex process on so many levels. And so I spent about 9 months to a year just like testing all this stuff on myself and recording the results and kind of put it together into this cookbook, which I call Hack Sleep, which are kind of like, you know, easy cures that you can use to, when put together, they make a powerful result.
Do you think some people are not aware that they're getting less sleep than they should?
I think most people are pretty aware because it manifests itself in your daily life. When you get poor quality sleep, it affects all of your life. Like you can't go out, you can't go see your friends because you're too tired. You can't give your best performance at work. You know, you have to cancel commitments, and it's just because you don't have enough energy to do all this stuff. And I remember like, you know, reading Reddit AMAs, like Bill Gates, for example, like people ask him, what superpower do you wish you have? And he says, I wish I had more energy. And that's really the thing is, you know, a lot of people, it's kind of like if you don't sleep well at night, you don't have enough energy to go through the day. If you're not doing enough during the day, then you don't sleep well at night. So it's kind of like a slippery slope there, I think.
Well, I have no doubt that it's the cause of a lot of people's issue, but I just wonder if they actually recognize that as the issue. When they're waking up tired, do they realize that they're not sleeping like they would have slept before electricity was invented, or that other cultures sleep twice a day? And, you know, as they dive for their caffeine and sugary drinks to try and get, you know, inverted commas, energy, or even worse, energy drinks, I wonder if they realize the cycle they're stuck in, because some of the research I've done indicates that most adults don't even know what a good night's sleep is since they were a kid, since they were a little kid, you know, riding around their BMX bike, coming home at dark, having dinner and then going to bed. A lot of them never actually have a good night's sleep since that time in their life. And maybe they just forgot what it's like.
Yeah, I think a lot of people do. You know, one thing that I like to say is that a lot of people get addicted to their struggle. You know, so we become so caught up in the daily grind and, you know, punching in a time card that we just kind of don't really have a chance to step back. We're not mindful enough to be able to make meaningful changes in our life. And You actually mentioned a great hint there when you mentioned electronic lighting. And I think electronic lighting is perhaps one of the most destructive inventions to our sleeping habits that has ever been introduced to humankind. We typically, on average, we spend 1 hour less sleeping than we did 100 years ago. And the culprit is electronic lighting. And there's actually studies that show that electronic lighting contributes to obesity. It also contributes to cancer in mice. It contributes to all of these ailments. And the reason why is because it fools your body's internal, your brain's internal clock. It throws off your circadian rhythm. So your typical circadian rhythm is a one day lasts 24 hours, but a circadian rhythm tends to last 24 and a half hours to 26 and a half hours. So we need to adjust our internal clocks constantly. And the way that it does that is light passes through the eye's retina and it's relayed to the hypothalamus. So during the daytime, it's really important to get as much light exposure as we can. Around noon is when you can get the most light exposure. You can get the most by far. So a 15-minute walk around lunchtime can really work wonders. And block off all light at nighttime because it's actually very harmful. And it blocks melatonin production and you get poor quality sleep at night.
Yeah. So one thing that I'd read a long time ago and I've adhered to is when I'm traveling at a new destination, in the morning, I make sure I don't wear sunglasses when I'm at a new destination. I'm letting the light come into my eyes to reset my body clock. Is that fact or myth?
It's absolutely true. And getting light exposure during the day is one of the biggest productivity hacks that you can do. Like as soon as you wake up, you want to get as much light exposure from the moment you wake up to start your body clock. And what it does is when that light hits your brain, it's released as serotonin. So serotonin improves your mood. It reverses depression. It makes you feel more energized when you take on your day and more productive. And if you're in a dark environment when you work, you're always going to be less productive because your mind just thinks like, you know, it's dark now, it's time to rest. So a lot of people use, you know, if it's not sunny where you are, if it's winter, a lot of people use light boxes and it's very effective. People report that it can actually replace coffee in terms of how much energy it gives you. It really improves your mood, as I mentioned before, and has a lot of benefits.
Wow. You know, one thing I noticed when I moved location for where I live, I used to be what I would consider a night person, a night owl. I'd work through till 2 or 3 in the morning and sleep until 10. When I came to this new place, I'm at the beach and it's northeast facing. In the morning, the sun comes up over the horizon. I wake up with the sun. It just turns on the natural light. My body just wants to wake up. And at the same time, I feel tired earlier at night too, as I'm spending more time away from devices. So I think that's a good indication that working with the natural sunlight, if you can, if you're in a close enough to the equator, I suppose, instead of at the poles, then that's a good natural way that you can use light to trigger your melatonin release and be more alert. So I guess we're moving into the what you can do about improving your sleep. So let's just catch up to where we're at. Right now, we've figured out that sleep is very important for all the reasons that are probably super obvious, that it replenishes you, refreshes you, you're repairing your mind and your muscles and you know, you're off time and it's vital for us to have this. So we do have a choice and we can change if we want. So Danny, what are the things we can do to change the sleep that we're getting?
Yeah, sure. So the first thing you need to understand is that sleep is a very complex process that it depends on 5 different types of factors. And these are social, neurological, psychological, cellular, and molecular. And so all 5 of these areas must be synchronized correctly in order for you to fall asleep. So if one area is disrupted, it throws everything off. For example, we mentioned psychological. So if you have too much stress going on in your life, if you're not dealing with cortisol, if you're not reducing cortisol levels effectively, you're not going to sleep well, even if you're getting enough light, even if everything else, all your other hormones are firing off properly. So we can kind of just go through those and have, you know, some really simple hacks and cures. I guess the first thing to start out with that you need to understand is when I was writing this book, I was really influenced by the book The Power of Full Engagement by Tony Schwartz. And he's interestingly enough, he's actually the co-author of The Art of the Deal with Donald Trump, the same author. And he's got a company called The Energy Project. And he's really big on managing energy and not time. And he really introduced me to ultradian rhythms, which are 90-minute periods of activity, dipping energy levels and rising energy levels. And so this same ultradian rhythm applies to sleep. But what I found really most interesting was, more interesting, was the circadian rhythm. And the circadian rhythm, as we mentioned, is kind of like your body clock. So it's more like a 24-hour clock. And your energy levels are always rising and falling throughout the day and the night. And it really corresponds to light entering the eye. If you want to reduce jet lag, for example, you reset your clock and you get lots of light. What's also really interesting is that circadian rhythm correlates to your levels of alertness, your levels of energy. So how much you're able to perform during the day. So you have it also corresponds to light and body temperature. So you have your highest levels of alertness mid-morning, and then it dips to its lowest point at 3 p.m. So that's when I usually like to take a nap around mid-afternoon, 3 p.m. And then it rises again after 5 p.m. This is your circadian rhythm. And then again, your body temperature reaches its lowest point at nighttime around 2 or 3 a.m. So I always try to structure my activities and what I do during the daytime to correlate to this circadian rhythm. And it's very important to understand. That's kind of the introduction. Should I keep going here, James, or did you have a question?
Well, I just want to say a few things there. Firstly, okay. It was fascinating watching Schwartz say that he was very unhappy about having to write The Art of the Deal. He said that, well, there's quite a lot of controversy about it, let's say that. Regarding the mid-morning thing, that makes a lot of sense with the advice we get to do our most important tasks early, which was, I love the energy management idea. I loved the powerful engagement. I also liked a book called Willpower, Rediscovering Your Greatest Strength, which suggests that we get this amount of willpower, like a bank account balance, that gets used up during the day and runs, you know, gets depleted by night. And it's funny how you said afternoon sleep, because that's exactly when I like to have my little after lunch siesta. And also about the body temperature dropping. I used to remember about 3 in the morning, my body would start shaking from fatigue and I'd get very cold. So it's interesting to me that you're saying that our body temperature drops at that time, but also the outside temperature drops, and it's probably a very good time to be fast asleep rather than trying to be doing any kind of work. Anyone who has a domain name portfolio that they purchase after midnight will probably attest to that, you know, bad decisions being made at that time.
Yeah, you can fight against this circadian rhythm, but you do so at your own peril. Because this is the way that your brain naturally wants to operate. And if you try to, you know, power through that 3 p.m. period, yeah, you can. You can spike your energy level by drinking more caffeine, but you're not going to be able to perform as well if you're following the natural cycle of rest and activity, basically. So Tony Schwartz says, you know, the rest activity cycle. He also says a quote that I love, humans are not machines, and we're not meant to perform continuously, you know, for 8 hours straight. So the better you understand this, the better off you'll be. And there's actually a graphic, you know, if you just Google circadian rhythm for alertness, that you can see the peaks and the troughs in your circadian rhythm. And I really try to optimize my day to match the upswings in my circadian cycle.
We'll get that image and we'll put it in the show notes here. Okay, so we talked about psychological and cortisol. Let's talk about some of the other factors as well.
Okay, sure. So one that kind of complements what we're talking about here really well is there's this hormone called adenosine. And interestingly enough, you know, when we first learned about adenosine, I think it was about, oh, I don't know the exact date, but it was about 70, 80 years ago. And there was a scientist called Piron. And what he did is he hypothesized that there was a sort of sleep toxin that built up during the daytime, during periods of wakefulness, that contributed to putting us to sleep at night. And so what he did was he would purposely sleep deprive these dogs. He would keep them awake for days, and he would insert a needle into their spine and eject spinal fluid. And he would take that same fluid and eject it into healthy dogs. And what he found was he discovered this sleep toxin where the healthy dogs suddenly, you know, they passed out because they had this foreign substance injected into them. And we really didn't know at the time, you know, what caused that. Now, we do know that it actually is adenosine. So caffeine, for example, you know, caffeine works to block adenosine. That's exactly how it works. It reduces fatigue by blocking adenosine accumulation in the brain. And what you need to know about adenosine is that it accumulates when we're awake and it replenishes when we're asleep. And what it does, it's kind of like the fatigue hormone that breaks down adenosine triphosphate, which provides life for the cells. So it's really interesting. One of the best ways to sleep better at night is to force yourself to do more hard work during the day, because adenosine buildup in the brain and body corresponds to the activity level of your body's neurons. So if you're operating at high performance mentally, if you're operating at high level mentally, or you know, doing physical exercise, that consumes adenosine triphosphate faster, you build up more adenosine. So the more hard work you do during the day, the better you'll sleep at night because you have more adenosine accumulated.
Well, that makes sense because ever since I took up surfing, I'm smiling when I say that because some of my friends now, they say when I say the word surfing, they're going to have a skull, a drink, a shot because I say it so often. But it's true that when I took up that sport, I felt tired at the end of the day, physically tired. And you combine that with a few calls and coaching sessions, then I'm mentally tired and I sleep really well. I'm ready to go to bed early because I feel like I'm done. And what is your take on caffeine then? If it blocks this, does that mean it's bad for us or does it mean it could have its purpose if we have things to do?
So caffeine has a long shelf life. It's important to understand that it can provide you a boost in energy. It can block adenosine buildup. So I'm a big fan of it. You know, if I need to get something important done, such as this call, you know, I had a coffee about an hour before this call. But if you're going to do it, it has a long shelf life. So it's important to drink your caffeine as early as possible. So if you're drinking coffee at 4 p.m., about 50%, I don't know the exact number. I have it somewhere in my book. Yeah, okay, here you go. So if you drink coffee at 4 p.m., 50% of that coffee, that caffeine, is still in your bloodstream by the time, by 10 p.m. So it can take more than 12 hours for the caffeine that you consume to completely exit your bloodstream. And that will contribute to less poorer quality sleep at night. So I really try to get that first coffee, the only coffee, as early as possible, as soon as I wake up.
Right. That's good to know. So if you're having coffee very late and you can't sleep, that's probably it. And some people metabolize it at different rates too. I found out when I was doing my DNA research, it turns out I'm a fast coffee metabolizer. But if someone were to be a slow coffee metabolizer and they have strong coffee and they have it late, they're probably even more at risk.
Yeah, it's a really funny thing. You know, I think caffeine affects some people differently. When I was in Malaysia, my friend, you know, he drinks coffee at night because it has the opposite effect on him. It actually makes him feel more tired.
If I have too much coffee, I'll just want to sleep. I can actually have a coffee and go straight to bed and sleep just fine. It's the weirdest thing. People think that's odd.
Do you find that it affects your mood or your psychology at all, James?
Definitely. If I have too much coffee, then I will probably start to get short on temper, and I will be more passionate about decisions. So it could make me more cranky, but it can also make me kind of hypersensitive and super alert as well. So I enjoy having a nice coffee shot before I go for a surf. Have a skull, because I just feel like I'm really in it. It's the strangest thing, but I'm not, yeah. I wouldn't say I'm over reliant on it. And I think I've built my tolerance to it fairly well over the last years. I enjoy coffee first thing in the morning, and I also enjoy it at an after lunch coffee before I go to sleep. You know, as I was saying before, it's a strange thing, and it doesn't bother me if I go out to dinner with friends or whatever. I can easily have a coffee at night time and still go home and sleep like a brick.
Yeah, so I think the important thing to understand here is to be mindful of how caffeine affects you, how it affects your mentality, how it affects your psychology. So if you're drinking coffee and you feel good about it, that's fine. Keep drinking coffee. But if you're drinking caffeine and it's taking its toll on you, if it's making you more stressed, if it's disrupting your life, disrupting your circadian rhythm, then it's important to take a step back. And what you have to understand is, you know, obviously we humans are irrational creatures. And if we need more energy, we're going to do anything we can to get it. But there's really other ways to get more energy and to get into state other than caffeine that you can substitute for a coffee, for example.
We should talk about that because I'm expecting you are going to advise against eating a packet of crisps or chips or going for sugary lollies, etc.
Yeah, so I'm living in Thailand here and there is so much junk food here. Everything has sugar in it. So it's really a challenge for me. And what I try to do is I just try to practice a process of substitution. So, for example, like I'll start craving sugar. And what I used to do, I got into this habit where I was drinking Thai tea which is packed full of milk and sugar. And I'd always feel tired after I drank it. So whenever I had that craving, I'll just substitute that craving and make it more healthy, you know, substitute for something more healthy. Like instead of drinking Thai tea, I'll drink a coconut, for example. So when you have that craving, you know, if you have a craving for something unhealthy, like coffee, for example, you can substitute something else for that, you know. So if I want more energy, if I want to get into state, there are other ways to get more energy rather than drinking coffee. For example, I did this call quite early for me here in Thailand. And before I was listening, so I was listening to music, I was doing a little bit of dancing, you know, trying to work myself up, trying to get my physiology going. And that's another way, you know, that you can substitute for coffee. And Amy Cuddy, she has a great TED Talk. I highly recommend everybody watch this. I don't know the name of, just look up Amy Cuddy, a TED Talk. One thing she says in there that's really stuck with me is that leaders have high testosterone and low cortisol levels. So anything you can do in your daily activities that can boost your testosterone, whether it's physical exercise, just movement, you know, our bodies were built to move, and anything you can do to lower cortisol levels. So I have a bunch of stuff I could give you about cortisol, but going back to psychological effects that, you know, psychological factors that can disrupt our sleep, cortisol is the stress hormone that is the primary culprit.
Right. This would be Amy Cuddy's Your Body Language Shapes Who You Are.
Yes, exactly. So she actually talks about a lot of stuff in that talk, such as power posing and stuff like that.
Gotcha.
But then there's also some other great points that she addresses.
Cool. We'll embed that in our show notes as well.
Okay, great.
So we've talked about cortisol a fair bit and adenosine. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
All right. And coffee. What else do we need to know if we're going to get better sleep?
Yeah. So going back to cortisol, cortisol is essentially the stress hormone, and it tends to get a bad rap. If you Google cortisol, everything you're going to see, every article is going to be how to reduce cortisol. But it actually does have some good effects. For example, in 1936, the term eustress was coined, and it's a sort of good stress, which helps us to overcome challenges, such as getting out of bed in the morning or climbing a mountain, something like this, that kind of pressure. The problem occurs when we continue producing cortisol over an extended period and we don't allow these levels to drop. So if we're continuously stressed out throughout the day, it taxes our mind and we end up burning out, we end up flaming out, and it also blocks our production of insulin, leading to a hormonal imbalance. And so a lot of us live in a fast-moving culture where we keep our stress levels high, resulting in cortisol in our bloodstream at all hours of the day and night. And that is, results in serious issues affecting our ability to sleep. So what I tend to do is it's really important to do daily activities that can help you reduce your cortisol when you need to rest. There's so many ways you can do that. I mean, you can listen to music. You can keep a gratitude journal. You can do dancing, yoga, meditation, breathing, spending time with friends, anything that contributes to relaxation. And magnesium has also been shown to reduce cortisol levels if you want to do some supplementation as well. So you can easily acquire magnesium tablets
okay.
at any GNC. But again, you know, I think that supplementation should only be used in emergency cases. I mean, if you're just doing like, if you're just writing a gratitude journal, if you're, you know, counting your blessings every day, then that's enough to reduce your cortisol levels. And if you can just have enough mindfulness that you can able to naturally cultivate levels of joy, you know, and being able to step back and realizing when you're stressed out, when you're anything less than joyful, that's really what it's all about, I think.
Right. So it's basically, like, I think like you said, if you're not happy or you're stressed out, then it's going to be a major problem. So it's about working on the really cause level of how do you improve the quality of your life. It sort of falls back into many of the other topics we talk about on Superfast Business, like setting up a subscription business, designing your life so that you're only doing activities that make you excited, and then all these other things happen. I mean, I was out there this morning in the ocean with dolphins, with the sun, clear water, thinking, how good is this? I love my life, you know, and that's what I do to wake up is I go and have that swim. I mean, nice fresh air, clean water, feeling good. Like the day's set up nicely, and then I'm only going to do good activities, like talk to my friend Danny about how to get better sleep, and then a couple of other calls, and have a nice lunch and an afternoon nap, and the day's going to be a great day. So as we just see where we've come on this journey so far, we've covered this idea that most adults probably aren't sleeping well, that they can choose to have a difference. When you travel,
avoid the sunglasses so that you can reset to the light. You've talked about the circadian rhythm and when the peak times of days are to be awake, when to sleep. We've talked about the impact of things like cortisol and caffeine and sleep toxin building up in our body. We've talked about Schwartz and energy management. What would be your action tips for someone listening to this podcast so that they can make a positive change or to swap something from now so that they might get a better sleep tonight?
So yeah, you kind of hit the nail on the head a second ago where you mentioned how you were feeling when you were surfing, just full of joy, you know, full of gratitude and full of life. And that's so important. And, you know, maybe you don't live near a coast or maybe you're not a surfer, but, you know, just the other day I was sitting having a coffee at 9 a.m, you know, opening up my laptop, and I just in a state like that, I just feel so grateful that I'm able to wake up whenever I want, that I can just sit here and relax, enjoy a morning coffee, that I don't have to commute anywhere. You know, there's always things that you can find to be thankful for. And I like to just tell people, you know, I tell the people that I appreciate my life, that I'm grateful for you. You know, that's very simple. I'm grateful for you. You know, you enrich my life in this way. And the more I'm grateful for, the more I have to be grateful for. So I think that's really important. But I have a laundry list of other things you could do as well. You know, a lot of the stuff that we already covered as far as caffeine, as far as adenosine, light exposure, cortisol. Another important factor is melatonin. So melatonin, you've probably heard of before. There's a lot of supplements out there which can help you boost your melatonin. I don't recommend supplements at all. First of all, most melatonin supplements are made from, the active ingredient is actually cow urine, interestingly enough. So I don't recommend using those. And there's no evidence that it can actually deliver effectively. So what I like to suggest is, what I actually do is I eat pineapple. Pineapple has been shown to increase melatonin levels by 266%.
Wow. Yeah, I am. I'm thinking another fun fact about pineapple. It's what a lot of the ocean-going yacht racers eat on the trip, because it's one of the few foods that tastes the same going in as it does coming back out.
Yeah, pineapple is amazing, man. And yeah, so I try to eat pineapple every day around 5 p.m. or 6 p.m., right as the sun goes down. And what you need to know is that melatonin production in the brain usually starts around 9 p.m. And in addition to adenosine, everything else, it helps us to fall asleep at the appropriate hour. And so pineapple, bananas also increase melatonin production, studies have found, but not as much as pineapple. If I eat 2 servings of pineapple, I'll just sleep like a log. You have trouble waking me up in the morning. And that's really helped me a lot, because I have a problem with waking up at night. So when we sleep, like I mentioned, we have 90-minute cycles. So we'll go into a deep sleep and then it'll come back up again. So we're almost awake. And I find that I tend to wake up and then I can't go back to sleep again. So what pineapple does, it helps me stay asleep at night. And that kind of leads me into the next tip. So understand that sleep, on a very fundamental level, it just involves brain waves. So there's 4 brain waves that we toggle through: beta, alpha, theta, and delta. And beta is when we're wide awake. Alpha is when we go through like a meditation. The theta is when we go through a light sleep. And then delta is a deep sleep, when we're very close to being in a coma. So when we do an ultradian rhythm, we're basically toggling through these different brainwave states. And what science has shown us is that meditation can actually help us move from a beta state, the really short frequency waves, to an alpha state, and then back down again. So if you want to, you know, naturally move from a relaxed state, an alpha state where you're ready to fall asleep, you can try meditation. I like to do breathing exercises. So if I'm having trouble falling asleep at night, I will start breathing, you know, like 3 or 4 seconds in, 3 or 4 seconds out, slowing my breathing down, trying to meditate, corral my thoughts a little bit. And if I can't fall asleep within 30 minutes, then I know that I need to get out of bed, and I'll go do some activity for a while, try to maybe go for a walk for 20 minutes,
good tip,
and then I'll try to fall asleep again.
So getting a bit of fresh air and resetting.
Yeah, exactly. I have a 30-minute get-up rule, and actually one of the most powerful sleep therapies is called sleep restriction, and I actually do sleep restriction on myself, where you basically force yourself to stay awake longer. If someone's suffering from insomnia and they're going to bed at, let's say, 11 p.m., they're waking up at 7 p.m., but they're not getting sleep efficiency, what someone like myself might suggest is, okay, for this, for tomorrow night, I want you to fall asleep at 1 a.m. and then you have to get up at like 5 a.m. So that might be a little bit brutal, but basically what you do is you reduce the amount of time they can spend in bed as much as possible. And then the next day you give them like an extra half an hour, And then you gently, you know, give them an extra half an hour each day. And I find that to be very effective for me personally. Like, I'll purposely sort of restrict my sleep a little bit to 6 hours a night. If I'm doing a polyphasic schedule, so I did polyphasic sleep where I did 2 or 3 naps during the daytime, then I'll only sleep maybe 4 or 4.5 hours a night. But an important thing you need to understand is that sleep cycles last 90 minutes. You're either sleeping, 3 hours, 4.5 hours, 6 hours, or 7.5 hours, or 9 hours. So it's an hour and a half chunks. And so for me, like, I know if I hit 6 hours, which is basically 4 sleep cycles, that's a good target for me. And I can go about my day, and I'll try to shoot for like a 25, 30 minute nap around 3 p.m.
Right. Cool. So the old polyphasic sleep, not many people have managed to get that one working properly, have they?
No. And I think there's a lot of misconceptions about it. You know, there's so many theories out there, but what it really is, you know, more than double the people who do polyphasic sleep, they do it because they're sleep deprived, not because they're trying to get extra hours of their day, you know, or be more productive or hack their brain or anything like this. Like, it's actually a natural cure for people who are not getting enough sleep at night to take time naps at regular intervals throughout the day. So there was actually a period of about 4 months last year where I was just sleeping about 4 hours a night because I was insanely busy. And I would sleep around 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. Occasionally, I might sleep 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. And what I found was that I could keep my energy levels high throughout the day, even on 4 hours of sleep a night.
Wow. Yeah. So if you can get it right, it definitely works. It's just that a lot of people, life gets in the way, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I misspoke there. It was actually 4.5 hours because I just mentioned 90-minute cycles. So it was 4.5 hours a night. But yeah, life really does get in the way. I was really busy at that time. I just exited a relationship, so I was single again. You know, I was going out all the time. And I just to be able to go out, you know, in Bangkok, you need to take that little siesta before you go out. Otherwise, you just can't function the next day.
Because it's a late night place, right?
Yeah, it is, definitely. It's a great place to be if you're a single guy, I'll just say that.
Cool. All right, Danny. So we've been speaking with Danny Flood from openworldmag.com. We'll also link to your book, which you can get from Amazon as a Kindle. And we've also got some great charts about circadian rhythm and a TED Talk embedded in the post. So head over to the episode called How to Improve Your Sleep. Danny, thank you for sharing this stuff with us.
James, it's always a pleasure to speak with you. I'm so grateful for you, and thank you so much for having me on your show. It was a pleasure.
Awesome.
Discover how to build your business
super fast.
Check out superfastbusiness.com.